The fire is not the symbol. When I saw the burning forests in Portugal, Spain, Turkey, Greece, yeah, or now in Canada, and you can see what we are doing with our world, for these young people, they know that there are not so many summers left. This is something which is not symbol. This is the reality. And the young people, like my children, they think so many summers and summer stories and love stories are not left for us.
Hello, and welcome back to The Director's Cut, brought to you by the Directors Guild of America. In this episode, a group of young friends vacation in a house by the Baltic Sea as an encroaching forest fire threatens the group, in director Christian Petzold's drama, A Fire, which was screened as part of the DGA's Global Cinema Series. As the days grow hotter and the fire nears, both temperature and tensions rise, allowing emotions of happiness, lust, and love to give way to jealousies, resentments, and tensions among the group. In addition to A Fire, Petzold's other directorial credits include the feature films Barbara, Transit, Phoenix, The State I Am In, Undine, and Wolfsburg. Following the Global Cinema Series screening of the film at the DGA Theater in New York, Petzold spoke with director Michael Almereyda about filming A Fire. Listen on for their spoiler-filled conversation.
Thank you very much. I'm a little bit dizzy because I came from Berlin yesterday evening, and I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning in the hotel, and I walk through the floors of the hotel like a hotel ghost. Yeah. And then I fall asleep at 7 o'clock in the morning again. And so I'm a little bit dizzy, but to be dizzy has something to do with cinema, because I'm always dizzy when I'm part of the audience in cinema, because my body is there and my mind is somewhere else. It's also a little bit like my constitution now. So this is a very nice cinema, I must say, but it's very cold and the air condition kills me, but the atmosphere is warm. Thank you very much.
I'm glad to be here. I've been an admirer of Christian's films. We've never met before. As a preamble, I'll say quickly, for those of you who may or may not have seen these other films, they're notably, in my experience, I haven't seen all of them, they're notably set in the past, shadowed by historical events. They often feature, are anchored by, centered on very compelling female characters. And this film is quite a departure, and in some ways startling to me. So that's maybe a starting point. How did you? Well, I can also say I've read enough of your interviews. I might steal a little bit of the preamble by saying this is a pandemic film. It came out of both Dreaming and Eric Rohmer's films, and a particular Chekhov story called The House with the Mezzanine. I believe that's it. And I've done my homework, and I actually read the story. It's a great story. So these are all things we can or can't talk about, but I know that the nature of the film, to me, is very dreamlike. Your other films have this quality of being very realistic dreams, of being discreet, gentle stories about historical violence. There are contradictions, so I admire that. And I'm already speaking too much, so an opening question would just be, how different does this feel to you? How did you feel compelled to make such a different film?
It was I think now 3.5 years ago, Paula Baer, the actress, and I, we stayed in Paris. It was 1 week before the big shutdown in Europe. And we stayed there for making press work. It was a fantastic week and fantastic interviews, and we are enthusiastic. And in this time, I had a script in my pocket, yeah, a dystopia script, written based on a novel by Georges Simenon, yeah, and the French distributor Marguerite Menegos, she's also had something to do with this here. She said to me, she read the script by me, and she said, it's not the time for dystopia movies anymore. Yeah. So, and we discussed it a little bit, and she gives me so much doubts in this week, because we talked about this in this afternoon. For me, dystopia movies are in the last 20 years, they have a fascist direction. Yeah, they want to make tabula rasa to our world, to create a new world. Yeah. And it's a little bit like Pol Pot in Cambodia, yeah, to recreate a new society. And so she gives me some doubts. Then we have some press conference days with interpreters. And one of the interpreters was helpless for a moment, and he's the cuffs, yeah, very hard. And on the evening, we were in, Paula, me, and the distributors and producers, we were in a restaurant in Paris, and it was fantastic food, I must say, and fantastic wine. And suddenly, the waiters, switched on the TV, what they never have done in a restaurant in Paris. And you see Emmanuel Macron, and he said, tomorrow we will stop everything. Yeah, so the whole work we have done for the movie was for nothing, yeah, because the cinemas were closed, and it was. Paula and I, we take the last plane back to Germany. When we arrived in Germany, we both know that we are infected by this guy, by the interpreter. Yeah, he infected us, and we have to lay down in bed for 4 weeks. I in my bed, she in her place, and we have telephone calls, yeah? And we have fear because there was no vaccine, yeah, in this time. And in these 4 weeks, I have to also to think about many things, about this dystopia thing. I have to think what I want to do next. And the first reaction of the government in Germany, also in France, was to close everything has something to do with for the youth, young people, everything. You can't sit down on benches with two people. You can't read in the park. Everything was forbidden. There was no social life. My son and my daughter, they're 23 and 27, like these guys in the movie. They were totally out of everything. They don't know what to do with their life. And then I think in this time, yeah, I have read this story by Chekhov again, and I have this whole movies of Eric Rohmer. This was a present of Film de Losange, of this woman, Marguerite Menegos, who said to me, no dystopia movies anymore. And I start to to see the Eric Rohmer movies again. And I fall in love with these movies again. From the first moment, I don't know if I fall in love again because I was in a sentimental mood, yeah, that because I was so old, 23, 24, when I saw the Rohmer movies first in my life. But in these movies, you can see society, you can see language, body language, how people talk 1981, 1983, 1987, yeah? How they kiss, how they betrayed each other. It was something, it was so present and so far away, like you said it in your sentences at the beginning. I'm a master of long answers. I'm so very sorry. It's something to do with this. I have a complete interview day today, and for me, it's better to speak English than to hear English. This is during at 6, and I have 1 hour spare time between 6 and 7:30 this evening, and I have fear to go to bed then, because then I never. This is like death for me then. And then I switched on the TV. It's very bad TV there. And I switched on a Tom Cruise movie, Mission Impossible, yeah? Interrupted by advertisement each 5 minutes. Yeah? And for me, I want to see it because it was in Berlin. Yeah? And I see Berlin through the eyes of a location manager from the United States. Yeah, and it was not my town anymore. Yeah, but it was interesting to see the place where I lived. It was not far away from the place, Flughafen Tempelhof, the airport, the old airport. I'm living there, I think, 5 minutes by bicycle, and I see it. This is not the place I'm passing each morning, yeah, with the bicycle. But what the Americans have done with our airport was very fantastic. It looks like New York and not like Berlin. It's great.
I'm wondering, the protagonist is an insufferable young man, an artist in his mind more than in reality. And I wondered, it made me flash on, what kind of a young man were you? What kind of insufferable artist were you?
Yeah. I said to myself yesterday, I want to tell the truth when I come to New York, yeah? Because I like to lie a little bit, yeah? But because of storytelling and so on. But these actors in this production, they are all intelligent, they have humor, they are never mean in their life. Yeah? And I like them all the whole cast I love very much. And on the 13th or 14th day of shooting, we sit there at this table where they have this red wine and their goulash and so on. And I know that the atmosphere was a little bit different, yeah? Because it's they start laughing when I came near the table for our rehearsals in the morning, and I sit down, and then Thomas, who's playing the Leon, said to me, "Do you had problems when you have made your second movie?" Like my character had also problems when he wants to write down his second novel. And I said, "Yeah, there were some problems. I have problems," and so on. And talk about this. And then I remember my second movie. Yeah, I have a success with my first movie after this was the last one from my education at the Berlin Film School. And this was a success on festivals. Like, yeah? And I was on the stage like this. I was on 10 panels. I can talk, like giving answers, long answers, like my first answer today, yeah, or tonight. And I love it to stay there and talk. And because I was 35 years old, yeah, when I've made my first movie. And so now I want to show the world what they had missed in the last years. Yeah? And so I like it. And I received money for a second movie. Yeah? And this script I've written, yeah, was based on a film noir by Edgar Ulmer, or Almer, Detour. Yeah? It was based on it. And it was full with so many quotations from this the history of cinema, and I want to show the world what I know. Yeah, and on the third day or fourth day of shooting, my girlfriend and now my wife, she visited me at the set, and she looked at me, and then she said at the evening during the dinner, she said, "It's horrible. You are playing a director." Yeah, and this, she was totally right. I have the feeling that I'm playing a director. I'm not by myself.
You stayed married to her. You stayed married to her. That's impressive. That's good.
Yeah, because of this critic. Yeah, I know. Because she was right. But I was angry. The first moment I thought about divorce. Yeah. But then I've tried to change everything during the production of this second movie. And many people liked this movie. I hate it. Yeah? And this came out of me in front of the actors, like as if the actors had make an interrogation with me. And I think half an hour I told them about this tragedy in my life, the second movie. So, and then Enno, the guy who's playing David is his character, he asked me, "What's the title of your second movie?" And I said, "Cuba Libre." And they start laughing very loud. Yeah? And they said, "Why are you laughing now?" And they said, "Cuba Libre, Club Sandwich. Yeah? Do you think about what is happening here?" Yeah? Yeah? Sigmund Freud and so. Yeah? And it's the same words. And it's a menu. One is for drinking, one is for eating, but it's the same shit. Same this. So, and So it was something, in this moment, I know that there's, the first time in my life, I know that there is autobiographical traces, yeah, in the script, which is not, which is coming by itself in the script. And on the other side, I know that the actors, and especially Thomas Schubert, who's playing me here, yeah, so I must say that he can trust me. I know this. In this moment, he started laughing, and he trusts me because I know so much about this asshole character. Yeah.
I can't help but be intrigued by 35 is young, but the characters here seem to be even younger. And I want to dig a little deeper, because another thing that intrigues me about your background is your association with Haroun Faruqi. And I don't know how many people know about him, but he was to me a very heroic filmmaker, and a very different kind of filmmaker, not really a narrative filmmaker. Can you just give a little background on how he influenced you and what your connection with him was?
Yeah, he died. He died nine years ago, and it's a little bit, for me, it's a little bit like the movie by John Ford, Young Mr. Lincoln. When I have written down a new script, I am going to his grave, in Berlin, and we talked a little bit with each other, yeah? And I've learned so many things together with him, not from him, like a teacher and a student or a pupil. It's, we have 25 years of talking together about movie making, about being humans. Yeah?
I didn't realize it's that long, 25 years. So yeah. When did you first encounter him?
In 1984, I was a student for theater, and he was a professor for cinema in the German Film Academy. And I invited myself in his seminar as a guest, because it's a small circle. And I asked him, I'm sorry, I'm from another faculty. Is it possible to sit down in your seminar? The seminar was the best I ever have had in my life. It's just watching movies like this. We have seen, for example, the first movie we've seen was To Live and Die in L.A. by William Friedkin. And we saw the whole movie in our private cinema in this academy. And then we go to the editing table. This was not a digital one in this time. It was 35 millimeters. And we take the first act, yeah, the role, yeah, the first act on the table. And we see the whole day, camera position to camera position. But where is the camera? Why is the camera there? What is the actor doing? When we came back to camera position one, like this, we destroyed it, I think, totally. At the end of the day, we go back into the cinema and watch it again. And it was rich and not poor. Yeah, and so reflection makes a movie rich and not poor. And this was a fantastic experience. Yeah? And the thing was, I was a very good football player, soccer player, not football, soccer player. And he's playing soccer in a club in Berlin. And he asked me if I play soccer. And I say, yes. And we played soccer there. And I have shot a goal and we win. And so we are together in a club, and there we started a deep friendship, I must say.
We were comrades, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an impressive story. I saw him once at the Buenos Aires Film Festival, and he was a kind of glamorous figure. He was lanky and handsome and looked like he could be in a rock band. And but I recommend his films as well if anyone wants to do some homework.
Why don't I tell you a short story about him. He made a movie about this risk capital. Yeah, in Germany. It's before the Lehman Brothers crash. Yeah. So, and it's fantastic. It's about Verhandlung.
Negotiation.
It was about one negotiation, 2 days in Munich. There's a man who needs money with his factory. There are people with money. And Haroun is filming this situation. It's like a thriller.
It's great. You see characters, you see bad, mean persons, you see new capitalism, which is hedonistic. They think they have culture. They think they in the spare time, yeah, when they have a break, they're hearing Mozart and smoking pipe. Yeah? They want to be someone, but they're parvenus. Yeah? And it was really great. And then we have written down together Jella. And it's based on his documentary movie. And I take out of Jella, in Jella, I have two pages of dialogues from his documentary. Yeah, so, because and this kind of language they use, I can't invent. I found it there. And then Harun was a professor 2 years later in Vienna, yeah, for filmmaking, and he showed this sequence from Jella and the sequence from his documentary to the students. Yeah? And the students thought that my movie Jella was the documentary and his documentary was the fiction. And this was very interesting. We talked about that sometimes documentaries are you can't believe them. Yeah? Fiction is more realistic than the documentaries. That's great.
It seems like you learned a kind of precision from him. Your films are very precise, and there's a kind of cool passion that is contradictory but very effective. The film of his I know best is he did a couple films that were documentaries. One was advertising people doing a photo shoot of fruit, you know, and lighting it as if it was a Vermeer painting and spending hours on this. And then there's a symmetrical film where they're photographing a naked woman. And it's for like a Playboy spread. Yeah, Playboy. And again, he's got an implicit analytical, critical point of view. But it's a very tough tutor or a kind of mentor to have. It's impressive that you have that connection.
I think it's something to do that he wants to make fiction too. Yeah? And he made one fantastic script, Betrayed, yeah? About a man and a woman, and the man kills the woman and take her body into the earth. Yeah? Nobody knows it. And her sister's coming, and the sister knows that her sister was murdered, but she wants to be as a substitute for a dead sister, and they're living together. And they're happy.
That's film noir.
It's film noir, really, yeah. Film noir. And the film's not good. But even yeah, I must say, his film is over reflected. Yeah, but you know, everything of the camera is right on the rainbow. Mm-hmm. There is no air. Yeah, no room for imagination. Yeah, it's everything's made. And he was totally depressed. Yeah, and I have to do the movie Betrayed on and on and on for as a substitute for him. I'm really sure that something
can. Okay, good. I'm looking forward to that. Should we have questions from the audience, maybe? Is there anyone who would like to ask something? It's not that hard. Somebody? Go ahead.
Can you talk about the casting? Did you know did you know the actor who played your main character, Leo, did you work with him before? Did you? So can you talk about finding him?
He's
an amazing, everything about him, his timing, he gives you so much, almost making it look like he's doing nothing. And you talk about air, and you put such beautiful moments of pause and air around him. That I understood the world through him, and by looking at the world around him, it's a fascinating study. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I saw him in two movies before, and there is a fantastic thing what happened when I must say. There was another actor I want to do this movie with. He's a very handsome guy. And I have a bad feeling that when you are handsome and an asshole, you want to kill him after 5 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. And And so I have made new decisions, and I remember him. I have seen him in two movies, and he was fantastic. But nobody knows his name. He's a little bit like an actor who's fantastic, but nobody's talking about him. Yeah? And so then I ask him, and he 3 days later, a telephone call, yeah, I will do it. Yeah? He was very cheap, I must say. The producer was a great idea, because he's cheap. The producers always think about money. Yeah? And so same with the music. Before, I have a song by Procol Harum, A Whiter Shade of Pale. And then I found this new Vienna group, The Wallners, with this song in my mind. And said to the producers, I don't want to make this music with Procol Harum. I want this, wow, fantastic idea. Yeah, it's just money. Yeah? So, and when Thomas Schubert was 18 years old, he's playing together with Paula Baer in a Western movie in Austria. Yeah, she was 17, he was 18. And in this movie, they tried to marry it. To marry, but they were, I think they were killed because of nobody wants them for this young marriage, and I think they were killed or something like that. And so I have a picture of those two very young actors in a marriage scene. Yeah? And now they're 10 years later, he is a little bit, now he's not so slim again, she's very beautiful, yeah, and adult person, yeah, and then when they met during the rehearsals, there was something. What is happening is that Paula, the whole time when she's reading the script, she asks herself, "Why I fall in love with him?" Yeah, this was the question. I must find a something,
a reason,
something, just like a little hole, yeah. And then we have our first rehearsals 3 months before shooting. It was a cold reading, and he was in this reading. He was fantastic because he's doing nothing, yeah. So he's doing nothing, and you fall in love with this asshole, yeah, and with this character. And Paula came to me in the first coffee break time. She said, I know it now, yeah? Because I want to, we must help him. This is my love. I have to help him to find the way into humanity, yeah? Into out of his body tank, yeah? And this is a good profession for us. It's a good Aufgabe.
It's a task.
It's a good task for me. And task is sometimes deeper than love, yeah? or desire. This was a fantastic idea. And he's a little bit in his private life. He's not a star. Yeah? When we have 2 or 3 days of non-shooting, so when we changed places, he takes his backpack. Yeah? And he's going to the forests, and 3 days later he come out, and he was alone there, and he's meeting the wild boars there too. Yeah, he in reality, not in Burning, and it's so I like him very much, and I think now he's making a big career in Germany. I've heard it. Yeah?
Hi. Biggest fear since then, you know. I want to ask you, how do you deal during this process with the symbol of the fire? What's for you the meaning of the fire?
Yeah, the fire is not the symbol. When during our shooting, there was forest fires around us. It was some 2 days, which was a little bit dangerous because the air is a little bit like in New York 3 weeks ago. You have this pollution in the air, yeah, and it's for me, it's something to do with the. When I saw these old Romero movies, and I saw also American movies about the summer and youth and no parents, no work, this is a fantastic genre for me. Yeah, I must say, when I saw the Burning forests in Portugal, Spain, Turkey, Greece, yeah, or now in Canada. And you can see what we are doing with our world. For these young people, it's not that that they have, they know that there are not so many summers left. This is something which is not simple. This is the reality. Yeah? When we are in Berlin 10 years ago, everybody thought, oh, we have 100 summers left. We have lakes, we have water. It's, but now the lakes are dried out, the forests are dying or burning, yeah? And the young people, like my children, they think so many summers and summer stories and love stories are not left for us now. And this is something which is not symbolizing by the movie, it's reality.
I think we have to say goodnight, but thank you for being here. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another DGA Q&A. The Director's Cut is available wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share, subscribe, rate, and review. We'd love to hear your feedback, and you can help fellow film buffs find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is produced by the Directors Guild of America.